From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 241, recorded live Thursday, November 18th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Laurent Bougnon about the model view view model pattern.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. On today's show, we're going to learn about model view view model. And we've got a MVVM expert, Laurent Bougnon, calling in. Where are you now? You're traveling?
No, I'm actually back home. I was in Berlin last week for TechEd Europe, and I came back last weekend, and I'm home now for a moment.
Ah, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for pausing your travels for a moment and chatting with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, me too, actually.
So I'm trying to get my head around MVVM, and you know, folks know that I'm a web person, and I've done a lot of MVC, and you know, MVVM for some people who don't do WPF or Silverlight on a regular basis is, you know, yet another acronym that sounds confusing. It's another architectural pattern. It's another thing to learn. And also, I hear a lot that the Microsoft tools don't necessarily give me a real strong, a strong scaffolding, a strong framework for which to put my MVVM model on top of. So I need you to start at the beginning. Help me understand what MVVM is, what model view view model is, how it relates to MVC, what's missing, what's not, and what I can do to get good at this.
Sure. So MVVM is very similar to MVC in the sense that it's also a separation pattern. So it's a pattern which is used to separate components in your application. And like the name shows, so the M and the V, right, the model and the view are actually the same as in MVC. The big difference is really at the controller level. And in MVVM, what we do is that instead of having one controller for the application, which is kind of driving the views, we actually have, for each view, we have an object called a view model, or sometimes also called a presentation model. And that's the major difference. This pattern has quite a few advantages in Silverlight and WPF over MVC. You know, it doesn't mean that you cannot use MVC in Silverlight and WPF, but it's just a pattern which is a little bit more natural when you do Silverlight and WPF, in fact.
When I'm doing MVC, Model View Controller, the controller is what we call a front controller, in that it's on the front lines and it's the first thing that gets called when someone, you know, clicks a button or does something. Mm-hmm. Where's the controller in MVVM?
Well, in MVVM, things are a little bit different in the sense that we rely very much on something which is very powerful in Silverlight and WPF, which is called data binding. And what you do when, you know, every time the user is actuating something on the view, there is actually, this action is passed directly to the view model, in fact. Now, there are cases where it's a little bit different because you have also in the views, right, you know, like in ASP.NET, you also have some code behind your views, which can be executed. We try to reduce the amount of code behind because code behind is a little bit more difficult to test automatically with unit tests. So what we try to do is really to have a communication which is as direct as possible between the view which is actuated by the user and the view model, which is going to react to this actuation by executing, you know, methods, etc. We have a few tools at our disposal to do that. So data binding, which I mentioned, which is really, you know, linking or binding the view to the view model. And also things called commands, for example, which are really a way from the view to actuate something on the view model directly. So in this sense, the controller is, you know, it's kind of, how should I say, it's kind of dispatched between multiple objects. And in fact, we don't have just one controller or one view model, but in fact, we have for every view in the application, we have an object which is fulfilling that role.
Okay. Well, let me try to put it into the context of the kinds of demos that I usually see when someone is learning Silverlight or WPF. Let's say that I have a book object that's in the database, and I make a data access layer, and I go and I get a list of books. So I'm in some code somewhere, and I have a list of book. And in demos, someone might just data bind that list of book directly from the database or entity framework and put it into a data grid or a list, and they'll say, hey, look, great job. Data binding is wonderful. What's bad about me doing that, just taking a list of books from the database and putting it on the screen?
Well, you know, the biggest problem that you will get in that particular example, right, is that if you suddenly decide to move to a different database system, or you decide to move to a different ORM, or, you know, you decide to separate your application in a client server app and to have the client running on the computer, on the client computer, for example, in the web browser with Silverlight, and you want to have your database on another computer. What it means is that you're going to have to modify quite a lot of things in your application. While when you use a separation pattern like MVVM, for example, what you will need to change in that particular case, you know, you will have the connection to the objects, which is going to be done in the view model, but your view will mainly remain unchanged, actually. So you try to have, you know, as loose a coupling as possible between your view on one end and the database at the other end, or whatever data persistent system you have. And by adding some layers in between, you really fulfill that. So that's one advantage of MVVM. There are, you know, others, but this one makes the application really more maintainable and easier to extend. So that's probably one of the main advantages.
Where would I start in an example like that? Is this, in a small example, is this simply a matter of just making a books view model class, which is effectively a copy of a book, and then shuffling data back and forth between the two?
Not quite. So the view model is really bound to the view. So, for example, in your particular example, you would have maybe a view which is called a shelf, for example, a bookshelf, right? And you have all your books objects which appear on that shelf. So what you would have in that case, you would have really a bookshelf view model, which is driving the whole, you know, data, getting the data and preparing them in collections. So that's the first view model that you get in your application. This is a view model which is driving the view. Then after that, your book objects, there are multiple cases, right? In one case, let's say you get your book objects directly from entity frameworks through WCF, for example. In that particular case, you can actually be able to represent your book objects directly in the view, because WCF has that particularity that when it's wrapping an object and it creates a proxy object, it will actually make it so that you can data bind to properties on that object. And, you know, the secret behind that magic is called iNotify property change. So it's this very important interface that we have in Silverlight WPF, in fact, in whole of .NET, which data binding rely on. So in the particular case of the book, you know, the bookshelf, you actually don't really have to wrap your book objects in a view model, but you will have to wrap them in a view model if you want to add properties. And those properties are typically things which are very much view oriented. Like, for example, let's imagine that you want to modify the title of a book and then save that book back to the database, right? What you can do is have a property which is called isDirty, for example, and this property is set to true when the title has been modified by the user, but the book has not been saved yet to the database. These kind of properties are not things that you want to persist in the database. What you do is that you create a wrapper around your data object, around your book object, and that's also what we call a view model. There is a slight confusion because we use the same name for the view model, which is driving the view, and for the view model, which is a wrapper around the data object. But in a sense, it's all the same. It's here to host properties that you can data bind to, actually.
Well, that brings up an interesting question, because when someone is doing XAML, X-A-M-L, XAML, there is this thing called a value converter, and people will say, this is the moment when you change the data to look more like the view. But it sounds like what you're describing is that I'm going to do more of that work in the code behind and basically get the view model as close as possible to being a model of the view as possible. And the data binding would then would in the XAML would do less work.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So one issue, so value converters are great, and there are definitely, you know, places where you absolutely need them. On the other hand, value converters are a little bit costly in terms of performance, and especially when you use them on the Windows Phone, which it's a computer, but it's a smaller and less powerful computer. So that can actually cost you quite a lot of perf. So what we do instead is, since we have the view model, which is preparing, which is kind of, you know, massaging the data for you, right? And preparing them in a sense that you can really bind to them very easily. It's actually easier to, not use value converters and instead to just have a property which is of the right type. This led quite a few people to say that when you use MVVM, you just don't need value converters anymore. In fact, you know, I think it's actually a little bit more subtle than that. There are cases where value converters will actually make your life easier, so why not use them? But it's true that in many cases, you can actually rely on simply having an additional property on your view model and prepare the data in that way. And that will definitely enhance your performance. You know, in Silverlight and WPF on the desktop, you might not even notice that, but on the phone, it's actually noticeable. So you need to be careful about that.
Could you give an example using our book example, say something about what a value converter is and kind of a typical example? I think not everyone who's listening would know what a value converter is. If I was doing it the regular way and I had a property on my book and I used a value converter, what would that provide me? What's an example?
Sure. Well, you know, you could imagine that, for example, your book has a promotion, right? So let's say, okay, this week, 20% less on that book. And this information is actually stored in the database, right? So when you get the object, you will have maybe a Boolean flag, for example, which says, okay, now I have 20%, 20% discount. Or you could even have a double value, which says that the percentage that is discounted, like 20% less, right? Now, with this value, it's actually a little bit hard to start something at the level of the view, because I might want to show a visual indication that there is a promotion on that book, like maybe show a flag or show, you know, anything, right? I cannot really do that directly, because all I have for me is a Boolean or a double. And what I really want to have is, something which is, for example, a visibility. Visibility is a type. It's an enum, actually. It can be visible or collapsed. And in Silverlight, we use that to show or to hide visual elements. So what you can do is wrap your book into a book view model and add a property which is called, in that case, okay, you asked with the value converter, right? So if I don't use a view model, what I will do is that I will create a Boolean to visibility converter, which is actually the converter that we probably use the most in Silverlight. And then you will say, okay, my visual element indicating the promotion is going to be data bound to that flag, to that Boolean flag, through the Boolean to visibility converter. So every time I have the value true, then the visibility of the visual element will be visible, and then the user will see that there is something. So that's an example of a value converter. Now, if you don't want to use a value converter, what you can do is wrap your book data object in a book view model and expose a property which is of type visibility directly. And what this property does is just, you know, fetch the flag and return visible or collapsed, depending on the flag.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, Team Pulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself, get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/Team Pulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TELERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us. Okay, so let me paraphrase and see if I understand. Since hiding, you're making something visible or not visible in Silverlight, and WPF is an enumeration, not just a simple Boolean. And data binding is effectively a free for loop. When I data bind something, I say, hey, that collection over there, I want you to apply it to this grid over here. And then the for loop, as it were, is done for you. Someone spins through your list and applies it to a grid or a list. With a value converter, that conversion is going to happen on each item every single time that binding happens. You know, if you run your application for hours and you bind dozens and dozens of times, that value converter is running over and over and over, hundreds, thousands, millions of times. But if I simply say that the view model is in fact a model for the view, I do that on the back end. And then when I do my data binding, I'm simply not sending a Boolean, but rather the enumeration that the data binding wants, which means data binding does less work. Is that correct?
There is something which is not quite correct in what you said, in that the data binding is actually not going to be executed like millions of times or anything, right? It's going to be executed only when the value changes, which is not very often. So in matter of fact, you know, it will be executed quite often when you do have, you know, things like UI virtualization, which means that the view, the template for the item is going to be rendered quite often. UI virtualization is a technique where all the items which are outside of the visible screen are actually garbage collected, right? So you don't see them anymore, which means that they are just gone from memory. So you can improve performance like that. This is a great technique, but every time that you bring those items back in the view, then, you know, the data template is recreated and then the binding is going to be evaluated and then you will get your value converters in the way. In that sense, you know, having a property on the view model is not going to solve that problem, but it's just going to avoid having an additional level of indirection through the value converter. So again, you know, on Silverlight on the desktop, you will probably hardly notice it. We just notice that binding in general on the phone is a little bit slower, and binding through converters on the phone is noticeably slower. So we try to avoid that.
Okay, so we always want our phone, to use a Scott Goo term, we always want the scrolling to be buttery smooth. And if I have, you know, thousands of items, but I have a viewport that's showing 10 or 15, as I scroll in and out, and, you know, scroll quickly, is that when the value converter is going to be firing? Because that's when the data binding is firing?
Yeah, that's exactly that. If you use UI virtualization, which is what most applications actually do, your value converters is going to be fired every time. That's correct, yeah.
But if I had, you know, hundreds or thousands of items in a list, except this time the list is a view model, would I have not created the Boolean, would I have not done the conversion of the Boolean to visibility for items that may never even be shown? So I may have done the work ahead of time.
Yes. So you can do things like that, right? There are multiple techniques to do, to load, data, right? So virtualization is definitely one technique. Another technique would be to preload the items and to not virtualize them. At the same time, the big issue here is that it's really more complicated to implement because, virtualization is given by the listbox control, which is built in, Silverlight. So you don't have to worry about that. If you start doing preloading items and caching them and fetching them in advance and executing the conversion, this is code that you need to write. So it's more complex. It's doable, but it's more complex.
One of the things that Microsoft has been criticized on, specifically around MVVM, is that there wasn't, or maybe isn't now, you can tell me, standardization, you know, from Microsoft. It's not like I say file new project and I'm all set for formal MVVM. And this has caused, you know, a dozen or more model view model toolkits to pop up, which I think is confusing for new people who are about to start out.
Yeah, that has been an issue, especially I would say last year and in the beginning of this year. We start seeing actually things coming out of Microsoft. Like for example, there is if you install the Blend SDK, there is actually a data application there which is built according to MVVM. If you install Prism, especially in the new version, in version 4, they do actually have guidance and components which help you to build MVVM applications. So the good news is that Microsoft has been listening to the community and checking, you know, what is maybe the best practices out there and using that. At the same time, I think that MVVM has really started to emerge in the community. I mean, even though, you know, Silverlight and WPF are built according to MVVM, so this pattern is there from the start. But I think we really started to use it a lot in the community, especially like in my case, I started using it a lot because I wanted to work with designers in Expression Blend, and that made my life so much easier. For other people that I know, they started using it because they absolutely wanted to, you know, to unit test large parts of their applications, including the view models, and it absolutely made sense to have this separation in place. So for different reasons, we saw really in the community a large movement in favor of MVVM, if you want. And as with all things, right, when you see people starting using a pattern, you start to repeat the whole, you know, the whole code sequence over and over again. And that's when you start creating toolkits and frameworks, basically. So, you know, there are quite a few frameworks around. I think that in time, you know, especially this year, we saw a few frameworks which emerged as being probably the most used. And especially now with Windows Phone 7, we saw that there are actually a couple of frameworks which are used, which are really from the community. At the same time, we see some guidance coming out of Microsoft. And I know that I've been talking with quite a few people at Microsoft about that in the Prism team and outside. And so I think there is kind of a guidance coming up. But yes, there was definitely some confusion around that in the beginning, for sure.
Is there official MVVM guidance from Microsoft? I mean, I see that on the WPF Codeplex site that there's a toolkit from 2009. You mentioned Prism. What's the official MVVM toolkit from Microsoft? And then what are some open source ones that you would recommend?
In terms of toolkit at Microsoft, I don't really know one. I think the closest that they have is really in the Prism guidance. They have really parts which are really talking about MVVM and explaining how to take advantage of that pattern and how to implement it. And in the Prism libraries, you also have components that you can actually use to build applications according to the MVVM pattern. So that's really where I would look now. The WPF toolkit that you mentioned, as far as I know, was something like an experiment. And I don't think it was actually ever maintained further than V0.1 or whatever it was. So I think that's probably not the best direction to look into. So yeah, I would definitely look into Prism. In terms of open source, you know, there are quite a few, like you mentioned. I think that we see a few toolkit emerging as being, you know, quite popular. So one is definitely Caliburn. Caliburn is a toolkit which is made by Rob Eisenberg. He's an MVP. And his toolkit is very, very impressive in terms of, you know, what it can do in terms of features and functionality. It's a toolkit that relies on convention over configuration, which is a topic also quite popular nowadays. And I think it's definitely worth looking into that. The other toolkit that I have to mention, obviously, is the one that I'm doing myself. So it's called the MVVM Lite Toolkit. It's also open source. It's on CodePlex. And this toolkit took a different approach than Caliburn. It's a lot less powerful. It's a lot lighter. So you can basically use whatever components you want and leave the rest. But if you want to use the whole thing, you can go into Visual Studio and do File, New Project, New MVVM Lite Application, and have everything which is pre-wired. There are, you know, some others coming up. One is called Jones, for example, for Silverlight and Windows Phone 7. There are a few others as well, you know, probably too many to mention, but I think Caliburn and MVVM Lite are the two that I see being quite popular nowadays.
Now, speaking kind of generally, when I install a framework like this, what am I getting? If this is a simple model, then what do I need a framework? And when I install something like this, how is it constraining me and hopefully helping me?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, as I often say, there is a lot of confusion around MVVM itself. I mean, is that a pattern? Is that a toolkit? Is that a helper? Is that a DLL or whatever? MVVM is really just a pattern. So, you know, you can implement patterns in multiple ways, which kind of explains why there are so many toolkits is because they are just helpers that help you implement MVVM in different ways. In the case of MVVM Lite, what you get when you install it is a set of DLLs. So there are two DLLs plus the System Windows Interactivity DLL, which is from the Blend SDK. And those DLLs have components that help you to build applications according to MVVM. One component is a class called Relay Command, which is, you know, it's like a point of entry for a method that you place on your view model. And what you can do is that every time your user is actuating a control on the view, the command is going to be invoked directly on the view model without having to write an event handler. So this is a loose way if you want to build an event, to react to an event. And one reason why we use commands in MVVM is that we want to separate the view from the view model as much as we can. We don't want to handle event handlers because those are very, very tightly coupled elements. And by using commands, what we do is that we basically tell the designer, you can use any control you like. As long as this control is going to invoke the command, I'm fine. And what we tell to the developer is you don't know how the command is going to be invoked. It could be a click on a button, but it could also be a mouse left button down on a rectangle, for example. You don't know that. It doesn't matter. What I want is that you just invoke the command and execute execute a method. So commands are very important. So you have that. Another thing that you have is something that I call the messenger. In Prism, they call that the event aggregator. And in fact, this is an object which allows you to send messages from one object to another, but in a very decoupled manner. So typically, if you have multiple view models, like in WPF, you could have multiple windows open at the same time. Or maybe in Windows Phone 7, you could have a settings view model and then the main view model. You can basically pass messages from one to the other, but in a very decoupled manner. So that's another class. So, you know, there are other classes into that, but in a sense, if you want, those classes are not really forcing you, you know, nobody's forcing you to use them, right? But if you do implement the MVVM pattern, you are going to be faced with some issues that those classes help you to solve. So that's what they do. Another thing that MVVM Lite installs, like I mentioned, are a project template so that you can just do a file new project and then start with an application which is already configured according to the MVVM pattern.
When I buy into the whole MVVM thing, how much other things do I have to buy into? Do I have to start thinking about dependency injection and unit testing and IOC? Is this a framework that brings other frameworks along with it that I may or may not be familiar with? Or is this something that I can get started with in a fairly vanilla kind of a way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it depends on the implementation that you choose, obviously. But I, for example, in my case, I really don't want to force anything on anybody. So you can implement an MVVM application without needing IOC if you don't want, without needing a dependency injection framework or anything. You don't really need to unit test. I mean, obviously, we recommend that you unit test, but you know, if you don't want to, that's okay. Your application will work, you know. So I would say that you can really do that in a very progressive manner. So if you decide to go with MVVM, I would start with small example where you don't use any dependency injection, and then start building on that. And then after a while, you know, that's always the same story with dependency injection. When your application grows, then you start seeing the advantages of using dependency injection to create your objects. Like one thing that we do a lot in MVVM is that we decouple actually a little bit more than what I explained. We use services to talk to the model and services to talk to the view as well. So one example could be, okay, if I want to show a dialogue to the user, I'm going to have something which is a dialogue service, and this dialogue service can be invoked and, you know, in a decoupled manner. Like this, my view model doesn't have to worry about showing a dialogue. It's just saying, hey, show me a dialogue and give me back the result, and that's it. These kind of services, as well as services that talk to the model, so services like, okay, get books or save a new book or, you know, things like that, those can very well be injected inside the view model. So if you want, using an IOC container for that is, you know, it's going to help you. But if you don't want, you can definitely go ahead and create those services by newing them in the code and injecting them directly in the view model. That works too, right? So it's just a matter of scaling, I would say.
All right. Well, I'm going to put links to all of the different frameworks that we've talked about and a few others, as well as links to videos of talks that you've done and other resources for folks who are listening to get involved and start learning about MVVM themselves.
Very cool.
Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today on Hansel Minutes. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
This has been another episode, and I'll see you again next week.